The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, folks, and welcome to Typology, the show on which we explore the mystery of the human personality and the human adventure through the lens of the Enneagram. My name is Anthony Skinner, your producer and co-host. So happy to have you here today, folks. We got a great guest today, folks, Director of Theology and Research at Proverbs 31 Ministries. Of course, you know Proverbs 31 through Lisa Turkhurst, who's been a guest several times. We love Lisa. Theologian in residence for Haven Place Ministries. Doctor of Theology, also a licensed therapist. I'm talking about Dr. Joel Mudumale. He is with us today. He is the author of his brand new book, The Hidden Peace, in which we will cover three types of humility you need to experience the full life we all seek after. Again, Dr. Joel Mudumale. So happy to have him here. So happy to have you all here. That's it for me, Anthony Skinner. And now, without any further ado, here is the host of our show, Ian Crum.
Hey, Typology Tribe, Ian Cron here. Welcome back to the podcast on which we explore the mystery of the human adventure and the human experience through the lens of the Enneagram. I'm joined, as always, by my dear friend, Anthony Skinner.
Ian Cron, good to be here with you.
Man, I am so glad to be here. I'm so stoked for us to introduce our family to Dr. Joel Mudumale, author of the new book, The Hidden Peace, Finding True Security, Strength, and Confidence Through Humility. He is an Enneagram 3 with a two wing. Joel, welcome to Typology.
Man, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Well, I want to tell you a funny story, Joel.
Okay.
I took a values assessment. It's called the VIA, the VIA, and they kind of like list your gifts in order of, in a hierarchy, right? Strongest to least strong. And I think there's 26 of them. Okay. Now this was probably 10 years ago. And do you know what my 26th strength was?
What?
Number 26. Humility.
This is epic.
I have never forgotten that, and I have never gone back to read the report again.
Right.
It was so you are on the hook today for solving my humility problem. But
oh,
I
gosh.
I do think though that I have grown in that regard. Life has, not cooperated with my plans all the time. Humility has come at great cost. But I do remember reading that once and thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I have such an uphill slog.
<That's hilarious. laughs>
This is going to be hard. This is going to be hard. Man, you're an Enneagram 3. And, I want to know how you learned you were an Enneagram 3 and what it revealed to you about yourself and how you've used it in your own life for personal development.
Yeah. So I think like most people, my introduction to the Enneagram kind of framework was really a bunch of friends who were like, have you done the test? Have you done it? Has it happened yet? And I'm like, what are you all talking about? And it's like, this thing is called the Enneagram. It's amazing. You got to do it. And I was like, my personality, Ian and Anthony, is to run away from the thing that all the cool kids are doing. Like, that's not my jam. That's not what I like to do. I don't know if that's an Enneagram 3 thing or not, but like, I kind of want to do my own thing. Then finally got to the point where every conversation was, this is what I am, and this is my type, and this is my strengths. And so finally I did it, and I work for a ministry called Proverbs 31 Ministries, and my boss Lisa Turker. She was telling me all about this thing. And in the process, I was like, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And the first thing I did when I took that test, I wanted to also see like, who are the major representations of the three, you know? And I got to be honest with you, kind of like your humility inventory, like you're number 26 on it. I like retook that test about 25,000 times because I don't want to be a three. I'm like, it seems like the three is associated with the most failure, the most arrogance. Like it feels like, you know, you look at, I think there was a biblical kind of paradigm on, hey, who would, you know, the disciples be? And I'm like, yeah, who's Jesus going to be? Because I don't think Jesus is a three. Like this doesn't feel great. But in the process, I actually learned that having a right awareness of my strengths as a three, what my motivations are, what my ambitions are, and being able to look at them honestly was a massive aid in helping me to fight a temptation to try to gain my own self-worth and try to put myself in positions of power and control and use other people as pawns in my life. It actually exposed these kind of subtle areas that I was leveraging some natural giftings to actually, hurt people in my life and hurt others. And so it was actually a huge part of my journey of actually walking into this place of humility because I had to become aware of the, you know, the tragedies that come along with something like being a three.
Yeah, there are some potholes for sure on the journey of each type. And we don't often associate humility with Enneagram threes or twos, right? We know that, for example, Enneagram twos their deadly sin is pride, and humility is obviously the antidotal virtue. But that's not type specific, right? Like all human beings struggle with humility. And what the Enneagram does is it right sizes us, which I think is a nice way of thinking about the word humility. So for example, with Enneagram twos, they tend to vacillate between overvaluing themselves and undervaluing themselves. Though I think that's something that lots of people do, but it's particularly true that twos have a pendulum that swings dramatically between over self-valuation and under self-valuation, right? Tell me about your journey with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there. An overvaluation is just feeling like every room that I walked into, I'm God's gift to that room and to that conversation. And then the under-evaluation is this feeling like, man, I've got to work so hard to just be accepted into a conversation, to be accepted into a room, to be accepted. And, you know, my academic journey has been a fascinating aspect of that. And along the way, thinking like, if I can just get the master's, if I can get the THM, if I can get the MDiv, the PhD, like I will finally achieve worth and value. And like at the end of my PhD journey, I was more aware of what I didn't know than anything else before. Like it almost made my insecurities even like brighter, you know? And so, yeah, I would say that's an absolute part of it. And then the two, I think I want to be a helper. Like I enjoy helping. I really do. But then the three part of me is like, and this is like an honest confession, it feels like, it's like, I want to help, but I kind of also want to be acknowledged for the help that I've done. You know, like I want for lack of better words, the glory that's associated with the helping part of it, and trying to manage the tension of that has been quite the journey along the way. And then on top of it all, when God was like, hey, by the way, I think you should, you know, write this book on humility, I was like, oh, that's not God, that's the devil. Like, I did not hear that correctly. That did not come from, you know. And then the Lord wouldn't leave me alone. Just wouldn't leave me alone with it. And so it's really been something that I've journeyed my entire life, and especially the last 2.5 years of trying to navigate, figuring out, like, who am I? Who am I actually? And what is my value and worth actually rooted in?
So what's the brokenness in you that led to this feeling that I have to prove myself to the world in order to win its admiration and love?
where do I start? I'm Indian, so I'm a child of an immigrant family. My mom and dad immigrated here from India. I grew up in the great city of Chicago. I watched Jordan win the three-peat and repeat the three-peat. And some of my earliest memories are of getting on a basketball court and wanting to hoop so bad, like just wanting to play basketball so bad. And all of my African-American black friends didn't quite know what to make of me. All of my white friends didn't quite know what to make of me. And all my Latino friends didn't quite know what to make of me. So in the summertime, when my skin got super dark and I had a nice tight fade, all my black friends would be like, yo, homie, come on, you're rolling with us. And then in the wintertime, when my skin got super light and I let my hair grow out, all my Latino friends were like, yo, Essay, come on. You know, you're rolling with us. And in the middle of it, I was like, y'all, I'm Indian. Like, where do I fit? You know? And that was actually a brokenness. That was an identity question of where do I fit and how do I belong? And if I could just get good enough at basketball, or, you know, and then being the only Indian kid in kind of the suburbs right outside the city of Chicago, you get made fun of a lot. And so I had made this vow, man, like, I am going to be witty enough to get myself out of being made fun of. Like, I'll flip the script on somebody really quick so that if I can even feel the sense of being made fun of, I'm going to flip it and make fun of you. And in the process, I turned into a jerk, like an absolute arrogant jerk. But it was came from, now that I know, and after a lot of therapy, it came from a place of wounding. You know, that vulnerability comes from that Latin phrase, which means to be wounded or to be woundable, you know? And so that's probably that deep sense of brokenness. And in an Indian culture where it's like, you know, very high levels of expectation to perform. They've got some beautiful aspects of the culture of family and like your name. Like everywhere I went, it was always, my mom would always be like, hey, remember, you represent more than just yourself. You represent your mom and your dad and your family and your grandparents. That's kind of a heavy burden for an 8 and 9 and 10 year old kid to navigate. And so there was this sense of, I just got to perform.
You know, Anthony, Thrive Market has been our go-to for organic groceries, and I love the convenience of getting everything online and quickly shipped to my doorstep. It's a huge time saver. Whether we're looking for certified gluten-free products or vegetarian snacks that meet our plant-based diet needs, Thrive Market makes it easy to curate our own shopping experience with the click of a button and trust that it's made with the highest quality ingredients and sourcing methods.
Oh, absolutely. Thrive Market helps me keep to my goals of eating out less and having access to hundreds of healthy, sustainable swaps across their food and categories so I can get organic snacks, low sugar alternatives, and other essentials that are healthy for me.
Yes, my friend. And as a Thrive member, I save money on every single grocery order. On average, check this out, I save over 30% each time I shop.
Wow.
For example, I saved 14% in my last order on Barleen's flax oil and 39% off Thrive Market's organic apple cider vinegar.
That's amazing. And those are both serious go-tos. Where can our listeners check this out?
Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/typology for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. That's Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, market.com/typology, thrivemarket.com/typology. So have you reached a place in your life now where I'll just ask you, where are you now in your own life journey? And actually, I'm going to ask another question. Therapy. When did you go into therapy?
Ooh. So I started therapy when I had, right after, like, my wife and I had gotten married, and we had two kids, Liam and Levi, and we were not in a great place. I was traveling. I worked for a Bible software software company, and I was traveling over 115,000 air miles a year. And I mean, you know, Enneagram 3, ambition, wanting to mm-hmm. be successful, and then I'm in a sales job. Like, right. You know, like, you're never going to sell enough, whatever it is, in order to meet that need. And in the wake of all of that, I kind of left my family in shambles. You know, my wife was left with two little boys and pregnant with her third and with our third. And so that's when we first started. So that was probably 13 years ago. And then realized that therapy shouldn't be something that is responsive. That's like, I'm not reacting to something, but it should be something preventative. Like it can be a great aid in the process. And so we started it, been in it ever since. And now my boss, Lisa, and I, and one of my friends, Jim Kress, we are part of a podcast called Therapy and Theology. And so I joke, I get to now get free therapy on a weekly basis through the podcast, but I'm learning quite a bit through that journey.
So what are you working on in yourself right now? Like, what's the big theme in your life that you're working on?
Insecurity. I think the big theme is insecurity. I think we have more accessibility today than in any other society to see how other people are doing in their lives, mm-hmm. to see their growth, to see their success, to see their wins, you know, and it's a curated view of it. Very rarely is anybody being like, here's my big fail today. Let's let the world know about that. And so in the process, I have always had this feeling like I'm behind. Like my wins aren't good enough. And it's resulted in kind of an insecurity inside of me, and where I want to celebrate other people's successes. But when you celebrate other people's successes inside the chambers of the human heart, it feels like an acknowledgement of your failure. You know? And mm-hmm. so that's the journey that I'm in, of just being like, hey, I've done all that I can in the various places that God's called me to. And it's one thing to feel the insecurity and to process through it, but it's a different thing to live with the lens of insecurity as like your framework for how you relate to other people. And so I'm trying to do the preposition through, like live through the insecurity, live through the fears, live through the reality of failure, so that I can get to the other side.
Have you had a big failure in your life?
Yeah, I've had many failures in my life. I'm trying to think of the biggest. I mean, I've had vocational failures. Of this is a funny thing for a PhD in theology to say, but my freshman year of Bible college, I failed. I failed out of Bible college, you know, and failures with my marriage, like just being so ambitious that I left my wife and my kids to hold the baggage for the responsibilities that I should have been partnering with on. I would say even just failure in terms of like family and relationships. I've let people down significantly because I've not been able to live up to expectations. And instead of being like, yo, these expectations are too high, or let's like have a conversation about it, I've just tried to do it, even if they're unreasonable, or even if I wasn't able to meet them up. And so, yeah, lots of different failures. Failures as a father, my gosh, I've got four kids, so I feel like I'm failing consistently as a dad. And lots of failures in my life.
Ambition is not a bad thing necessarily, unless I suppose it overrides everything else. But you know, in its root, in the root word of ambition are the words craving and yearning. And there is a kind of craving inside of it. So if what is it that Enneagram 3s are craving after?
I mean, for me, the crave is to be known and to be loved.
Okay. You
know? Yeah. I think I crave personally, I'm craving to be known, to be loved, to be valued, to be seen, to be recognized. Mm-hmm. Those are all the words that I would describe the things that I'm longing for.
Hmm. So I recently was reading Tim Keller's book, The Art of Self-Forgetfulness, I've read it a few times, and I just thought, I'm gonna go back and reread it. Have you read that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was part of my research process for the Humility book.
So, you know, Tim, I don't agree with Tim on everything that Tim had said in his storied life, you know, his wonderful life.
Yeah.
But I do agree with him about the problem of the human ego. Mm. Right? That our ego is empty. That, and so we have to overinflate it.
Yeah.
Right? It's empty. It's busy always comparing itself to other people. It's always busy trying to keep itself propped up, right? Mm-hmm. It's fragile. It's all of these, you know, the attributes that he gives to the ego. And he talks about humility, and I'm talking about this with Enneagram 3s, and this is true for everybody on the human adventure. Like, for so many of us, the problem is our ego, our very fragile ego that wants to draw a line between itself and everything going on around it all the time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And of course, he says, right, that the key here is self-forgetfulness, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that, and he would call that gospel-centered humility.
Sure.
Right. What do you think? I mean, to me, I go back to the word ego, not pride as the opposite, right? I mean, pride is a feature of the unhealthy ego.
Yeah. Right?
But to me, you know, so much of the striving and the craving of the three has to do with, and the self-presentation that the three has is that they're confident, they're charismatic, they've got it together, they're unflappable, they can kill it out there no matter what room they walk into, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is all ego stuff going on.
Yeah.
This is all, right? And what it really reflects is, what to your point, insecurity, right?
Yeah.
About one's true value and the source of one's own true value.
Yeah, let me give you an example of that insecurity in what you just described. At the height of my career at the software company, I was doing presentations, and I was in arena events, over 10,000 people, and I'd get up and I'd do like a 7-minute presentation in these places where, you know, basketball players are playing. I mean, just the height of my career. And I remember getting up and doing this presentation, and Ian, I'm not. Honestly, this isn't prideful. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying a fact, and my sales numbers proved it. I crushed it. Like, you just crush it, you know, and you get laughters, and you're moving people through something. And I had these moments where I would get done, and I'm surrounded by 10,000 people that have just loved everything that came out of my mouth. And I would go back into that back tunnel and instantly feel lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instantly feel like nobody understands me. Mm-hmm. Nobody actually gets me. And then the fear in the back of your mind that's plaguing me is, do people only care about me because of what I can give them or because of who I actually am? Mm-hmm. You know? And so that's like that insecurity stuff. So Keller, I'm a huge Keller fan. I actually have his book. I'm doing a thing on marriage, and I've been reading his The Meaning of Marriage. And like you, there's certain things that Keller says that I disagree with. In my book, one of the things that I try to do, and the idea of self-forgetfulness is a tricky, like, I think precision in our language is very important. And so what I talk about when I say humility, you know, the famous phrase, it's historically attributed to Lewis, is humility isn't thinking about yourself less, it's thinking about yourself less often. And I would say yes, and I see humility as a three-part movement. Humility is first about an awareness of who God is. If I can know who God is, then I can know who I am. That's the second movement. And if I know who God is, and if I know who I am, then I know how to rightly relate to other people. And once I have that, it's actually less about self-forgetfulness and more about rightly understanding myself in the midst of the various domains of life that I live in that isn't over-evaluated or under-evaluated. So, like, humility is a protection, a prevention, and a preservation. For three on the Enneagram, this is like what I consistently am going back to. Humility is a protection. It's a prevention. It's a preservation. Humility prevents me from thinking too low of myself. Because if I think too low of myself, everybody's inevitably going to walk all over me, and ain't nobody want to be walked over. But humility is a prevention. It prevents me from thinking too high of myself. Because if I think too high of myself, inevitably I am the one who's walking over people. And then humility is a preservation. It actually keeps me preserved and rooted in the life of Christ, which actually is where I'll find significance and value and stability. And so I would agree with so much of what Keller said. I think I have a little bit of a challenge with that idea of that self-forgetfulness, because at some level you have to not necessarily forget yourself totally. And that's not exactly what Keller is getting at. But you have to be able to recognize yourself appropriately and rightly. And so for like a three, like, one of the challenges for me is self-obsession. Like, I want to become self-absorbed. I want to be obsessed. And the value of humility for me has actually been self-awareness. It's given me the gift of self-awareness back, where I can actually see rightly. When I'm self-obsessed, I actually see tunnel visioned. You know, I call it the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I. But when humility steps in and I'm able to regain my sight, I'm actually able to.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To see appropriately.
So you just said so many things there. I'm not quite sure which trail I want to run down here. Maybe we could put it this way. I think humility, maybe if you know, Tim, in his writing, you know, he doesn't incorporate a ton of humor in his writing, right?
Right.
But I think if I were going to talk about humility, I might couch it in the language of what it means to get over yourself.
Yeah.
And self in quotation marks, right?
Yeah.
It's about getting over yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Over your either overinflated, underinflated ego, the whole, where everything is, the universe is revolving itself around the craving of the ego for recognition, for validation, for a sense of having value, which is a big deal for threes, man. Like the thing that threes fear the most is they don't have value.
Yeah.
You know, that is like, that's a big core fear for threes. I think it takes a minute. Man, boy, and Anthony, you've heard me say this before. There are just no hacks in the spiritual life. And all the work takes a minute. You know, you go online and you think based on so much stuff that you see and you read that, you know, if you just do this, you're going to get that. And it's like, oh yeah, plus about 15 or 20 years of hard work.
Yeah.
It comes about slowly, man. It comes about slowly. Do you think that there's a relationship between humility and age?
I think there is a partnership between the two, for sure. I think, like, you know, your point of, I think the Christian life is slow growth, and there's a beauty to that slow growth. And we're in a society that doesn't want slow growth. We want instant growth and instant gratification. One of the things that I found fascinating is one of the most important prepositions throughout the scriptures is the preposition through. And yet we don't want to get through anything. We want to get around, under, we want to short circuit the thing. I've got a friend who is a part of AA. And one of the things that he said to me once is one of the meetings that if it takes you 9 miles to get in somewhere, it's going to take you 9 miles to get out. And what's fascinating though, is most people want to go 9 miles in and then get helipadded out. You know, and that actually short circuits the process of cultivation and growth. And so, yeah, I think there's a direct correlation with age and with humility. And I think it can work for you or it can work against you, you know, as much as you invest into one thing, which is humility, which is, I think, will cultivate a life of stability and peace. But you can also invest in things that, that you think are going to get you peace and stability, but in the end actually make you more dysregulated and disoriented in your life. And so, like, that through preposition is so vital in scripture. Like, it was necessary for the Israelites to go through the Red Sea. It was necessary for them to go through the wilderness. It was necessary for Jesus to go through Samaria. It was necessary for Jesus to go through the cross. And so it's in the midst of the through that we actually learn what humility is and how, and I argue for this in the book, that humility is actually our path to regain our true humanity. And I think we all want to be like true humans. We want to be good humans. We want to be people that are enjoyable to be around and do good in the world. You know, like, if you have any sense of moral compass inside of your heart, you're like, I don't want to be known as a jerk. I don't want to be known as a person who did bad in the world. I want to be known as a person who did good in the world. And humility ended up being the number one, like, the Greek word is tapianos, it was unknown in the Greco-Roman world. And yet, this is the number one phrase that Paul uses to describe the attitude, the virtue that should mark these first followers of Jesus. And guess what? They did immense good in the world.
You know, one of the things I was thinking of as you were thinking about was about the root of the word humility, which also, another word shares the same root, which is humor.
Yeah.
And this notion that for me, so much of what has helped me in recent years on that journey has been having a sense of humor and the capacity to laugh at oneself.
Yeah.
Which people don't really have very much. People can mock themselves. It's different. To have a true sense of humor about your own humanity, which also derives from the same word, humanity, yep. Humor, humility, they all come from the same root word, right?
Yeah.
Seems to me, man, for me in the journey of faith, I have come to understand the value of humor. We are so serious. You know, Christians are so, they take themselves so damn seriously. It is ridiculous, man. It is ridiculous. We are, the laughter at our own foibles, at our own overvaluation, our own, the crazy little games of our egos and the things that we do in our Enneagram types and all this stuff, we're so serious. It's like, you ought to have a sense, we need a sense of humor to be married to humility as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually pretty convinced that Jesus had a great sense of humor. There's a story of Jesus on the road to Emmaus in Luke 24. These two guys are arguing with each other, and they're like in a serious dispute, and Jesus rolls up on them, and he's like, what are you guys talking about? And they get mad at him. Like, are you the only one in all of Israel that doesn't know, you know, all these things? And then Jesus responds, and he's like, what things? You know, and like he knows exactly what's going on, but he can even take a tragic thing like the reality of the cross. And I think he's kind of being humorous. That's just my view on it. And I do think that humor is really important because, there's something physiological that takes place in our bodies when we laugh, you know? I've got some really good friends of mine from Chicago. We all grew up together. And, you know, Ian, when you're around old friends and you have old jokes, it's like that Ben Rector song, like it's really hard to make old friends, that whole deal. And you got old friends and you recycle old jokes. You recycled old stories. And some of your oldest friends are the only ones that know some of the most insecure stories about yourself, you know, the weird, awkward stuff. And in those moments when I'm laughing, And the laughing is at my own expense. Like, I've got this story that my friends tell me, like, we were kids and I was trying to be cool on a dance floor at a wedding and I decided to slide across the dance floor. And when I slid across the dance floor, like, I ripped up my suit, my little, like, 8-year-old kid, like, suit, whatever, and I had holes on my knees. And to this day, I'm almost 40 years old, to this day, when we get together, I know it's a matter of time before those guys bring that up. And when we laugh hard. And it's almost like in the midst of that laughter, I'm regaining my humanity because I'm recognizing the reality of my weakness. Like it's okay to laugh at those things. Now, I could get mad. I could get angry. I could be like, you guys are jerks. Why do you bring up that stuff in my life? And, you know, so I have a choice either to embrace the humor or to fight against it. And I actually think fighting against it, you're gonna lose your humanity. Like, you're going to lose yourself.
Yeah. It seems to me that when you can laugh at yourself, what it does is it resizes you.
Mm.
It right sizes you. It puts you back in the best sense of the word, not in the negative sense of this phrase. It puts you in your place. It mm-hmm. correctly sizes you, which then equals humility. Yeah. Right? It's being right-sized. When we can laugh at ourselves without shaming ourselves or beating ourselves up, where it's not mocking ourselves or deriding ourselves, when it's just genuine, innocent, heartfelt laughter at our own foibles, suddenly I'm right-sized and I'm not needing to be in the front of the boat. I don't need to be in the back of the boat. I can be in the middle of the boat with everybody else who are properly sized.
Yeah.
Right. And suddenly I'm no longer making a bid to be the creator. I'm happy to be a creature.
Yes.
I'm just happy to be a creature.
Yeah.
And to enjoy my creatureliness.
Mm-hmm.
And to be at home in my creatureliness.
Yeah. It strikes me.
I think that's humility.
Yeah. It strikes me because this, you know, point I hear and you make, Ian, the humor and right sizing you're talking about, it's actually the capacity to enjoy the truth about yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? You're enjoying the truth mm-hmm. about God, about yourself, and about others. Oh yeah, this is who I am. This is where I am. I can do this. I can have this thing that I experienced, Joel, that you said at this wedding. Yeah, that's me. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a story, Joel, and you feel free to use this when you're speaking in front of 10,000 people.
That was a long time ago. Now yeah. I'm just in front of my kids.
Well, that'll bring humility. Separate topic.
Gosh. Yeah.
So years ago, my wife's a big yoga nut, and she's really good at it, like incredibly good. And she does Bikram hot yoga.
Yeah, I love hot yoga.
Many days a week, and she is amazing. So one day she takes me to a class, and I go in. This is years ago, okay, maybe 15 years ago. So she says, well, you need to come to yoga with me. And I'm like, oh, really? You know, like yoga, whatever. I'm a runner. Oh, I'm, you know, I go to the gym and maybe I lift weights or something like that. But yoga, please. What kind of a workout is yoga? So I go to yoga, right? And I remember I walked into the room and it's 106 degrees and humidity is like, I don't know, 40%, 50%. It's crazy hot. And I walk in, I was like, whoa, kind of hot in here. But I'm looking around at all these like Lululemon clad human beings, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm going to show them what, you know, I'm going to kill this, right? Well, we get into this class and it is so dang hard. I cannot believe it. And we go to Eagle Pose, you know, Eagle Pose, right? Where mm-hmm. you have to, you know, you have to, I can't even describe it. You have to wrap your arms and your legs and
yeah.
sit.
Yeah, slowly go down.
Slowly, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going down. I'm trying to do this. I'm on the verge of passing out. And I do the one thing you shouldn't ever do in a yoga class filled. I mean, 50, you know, people in the class, blah, blah, blah. I'm going down. I'm doing my best. And I farted.
Yeah. Was it audible?
Oh. It was a full-throated announcement of my presence in the class. Okay. And then there was that pause in the silence. You know, it was very clear what had happened and who was the source of the issue. And then suddenly my wife starts laughing.
Yeah.
Okay. My wife starts laughing. And then everybody in the room falls out of Eagle Pose and starts to laugh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, what I experienced in that moment, Joel, was actually humiliation.
Yes.
Which is a sense of, I feel humiliated. I feel, you know, ashamed of myself. Blah, blah, blah. Well, not much longer in the class, the teacher said something interesting. This is before we went to the floor part of the class. She said, if you're feeling overwhelmed and chaotic inside, lay down in Shavasana. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's just laying down on your back. Right. If you're overwhelmed, if your heart is racing, if you're having trouble breathing, just lay down. And she said, we say that is the hardest of all the poses because it requires the most humility.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the difference between humiliation and humility that day.
Yeah.
In that class, mm-hmm. right? Humiliation of being, you know, the spotlight's on you for being foolish and but da da da. But humility is knowing your limitations, laying down, saying to the world, this is as far as I can go. And to me, it was so instructive that one stupid class taught me the difference between humiliation and humility. Recognizing my creatureliness, my limitations, the need to lay down. And of course, you know, it came at a little bit of a cost. But again, I do think it's important to highlight this because we do confuse humiliation with humility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's so good. And I think one of the things that could have robbed you in that situation would have obviously been pride or ego, you know, like this thought that, oh man, I just made a humiliation of myself in front of everybody. Now I got to prove to this entire yoga studio that I can crush every pose, you know, and go through it. And yet that embracing of that pose of humility was an ability for you to recognize your limits, and your limits are not evidence of your inability in a grand sense. It's actually a huge self-awareness so that you can do the things that you need to do later on. Pride tempts us to believe, Ian, that you and I are the pinnacle of creation, right? Mm. Humility reminds us that we're actually beautiful, that we're loved, we're cherished by God, but we are indeed the creation while He is the creator. And so, yeah, I think that's a great one. And the other thing too, I think about that story, Ian, is we typically think of ourselves like in an individualistic sense of like, here's what I'm getting through it. I have I just wonder, and we don't know this, but just like, what about those people in that room? You know, in that moment, they were the ones laughing, but in a flip second, we can always be the ones who are laughed at. And so that time mm-hmm. you were the one who farted in front of the entire, and everybody, you know, we don't know when was the next time that they're in that situation. They're the ones who rip one. They're the ones that fall. They're the ones that, and it's almost like the way that you and I respond in our moments of limitation and weakness, even more so in the context of a public setting, there are these seeds that are being planted for a possible way for other people to experience a type of stability, a type of peace, a type of benefit that they might not even have recognized, but they can look back and be like, man, Ian went through that. He survived. I guess I can survive this one too.
Yes. And now, Anthony, we have officially told a fart story for the first time in 76 years of shows. We have now accomplished something new that I can't believe I told the story, but whatever. How does an Enneagram 3 achieve humility? It's hard for threes.
Yeah, I actually don't. I think that achieving language is actually the most destructive language.
Oh, good.
Keep going. Yeah, achievement is an illusion. Like, you can't achieve humility. Humility isn't something to be achieved. In The Hidden Peace, I argue that humility is something that ought to be cultivated. Mm. Paul in Galatians chapter 5, he talks about the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, all these types of things, you know? But interestingly, he uses agricultural language, and he doesn't ever talk about the soil. And church scholars and early church fathers forever have pointed out that actually the soil elsewhere that Paul points to is the soil of humility. And so the issue isn't about achievement. The issue is cultivation. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, well, how do we cultivate humility in our lives? And the thing about anything, like, I have this curry leaf plant that my uncle from Texas gave me, and it's like Indian food, you got to put curry leaves in it. And there's a huge difference between having like an actual curry leaf that, you know, plant that produces fresh curry leaves from going to an Indian store that ships stuff over. And y'all, it has been a bear trying to keep this thing alive. It has been a bear. And what I there's so many things I didn't know. I didn't know about the soil. I didn't know about the right type of sunlight. I didn't know about how damaging it could be for my four-year-old to put her toys inside of the soil of the, because we have to keep it inside because of the climate stuff. And so part of cultivation is a consistent return to that soil and evaluating it. Is this still healthy? Are there things that have been planted in that soil that are actually destructive? Where is hidden pride? I think hidden pride is a massive issue for so many of us. What is hidden pride? Hidden pride presents itself as the fruit of the Spirit, but on the inside, it's actually corrupt. It's actually despoiled. And so on the outside, it looks beautiful and pleasant, but on the inside, it's actually doing immense harm. And the danger of this is that hidden pride happens in the chambers of the human heart, where there's no visibility to it. And so you have to have honest exploration of what's actually happening in your heart. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say it's achievement. And anytime I've tried to achieve something, even if I get the persuasion that I've actually achieved it, that is the first red flag in a total unraveling that's about to happen in my life. Because I think that's where pride actually takes your feet out.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Hey, everybody, we're talking to Joel Mutamali, the author of the new book, The Hidden Peace, Finding True Security, Strength, and Confidence Through Humility. Joel, this has been a really rich conversation, man. And I hope it's been an encouragement and I know it's been a value to everybody. Tell folks how they can learn more about you and about the book.
Yeah, so you can find the book on Amazon. You can just type in the title, The Hidden Peace, or my last name is Mutamali, Muddamalle. Not many of us out there, so that'll pop up pretty quick. I'm on Instagram, same thing, at my last name, and I get to serve at Proverbs 31 Ministries, and so it's a joy to be able to work with my boss, Lisa Turkers, which some of your audience may know who she is. She writes a few books every now and then.
Well, We are old friends of Elisa's, and she has been on our show before and a couple of times, and she is a delight. And so pass on our best to her, and listen, best wishes on the book,
thank
man.
You.
I'm encouraging folks to get it. Again, it's The Hidden Peace, and that is P-E-A-C-E, The Hidden Peace, Finding True Security, Strength, and Confidence Through Humility. Joel, thanks for being on with us. Anthony, thanks for being my pal.
You bet, man.
Thanks for keeping me in my creaturely state.
Happy to serve.
And all of you, and everybody out there, remember these words. May you have love. May you have joy. May you have peace. May you have healing. And may you have rest. We'll see you next time.